Recalling that your own imagination is also a part of nature is one way to reconnect with the gorgeous wellspring of magic that our universe hides in plain sight. Welcome to the Crypto Naturalist. Listeners, the sun set a few minutes ago. I'm sitting on a hay bale in a weathered barn, the dusty gray of an aged elephant. The boards seem to have shrunk since they were first nailed in place, so I can still see the rising moon through the cracks. The wind is up, and its searching fingers are finding all those gaps, reaching the wind chimes dangling from the loft. It smells like dust and hay and the memory of horses. But I'm here because of ghosts. The old fella who owns this barn and I have a mutual friend who passed on news of a haunting. So I consulted my library of crypto-naturalist writings and found that here in eastern Nebraska, the time and weather was right for ghost flies. See, ghost flies are a bit like cicadas, living most of their lives underground before surfacing for the briefest of times. Different broods follow different timetables, some notable populations rising up at the end of October. But not this spring group here in the Cornhusker State. Of course, unlike cicadas, ghost flies are about the size of a pinhead, and when they gather in their mating swarms, they bioluminesce a pale blue or green. Yet it's the shape of those glowing swarms that earned them their name. The ghost flies seem to cling to the shape of, well, lives that have passed on from the world. At least, that's the predominant theory. Whether they are revealing the presence of an actual specter, or following the currents of some form of place-bound memory is unclear. I'd personally say it's unclear if such a distinction even matters. What does matter is that they are a rare and spectacular sight. So, here I sit, right where I'm told light and movement has been seen for the last few evenings, clutching my recorder to my chest and talking to you good folks. Hold on a sec. My radio's peeping at me. I'm guessing that's Cassandra with today's Hidden Lore segment. Hi, Cassandra. I'm here. Go ahead.
Chrysalis. One day, the caterpillar forms a chrysalis, waits a while, becomes a butterfly. They told us this much, told us to wait for chitin to split, for the emergence of dazzling colors and pumping wings, but they never talked about what really happened inside, how the caterpillar's whole body dissolves, how for a time there is nothing but soupy liquid, butterfly goo, formless but for the rigid purse holding it in midair. No one told us either that when a caterpillar was born, while it grew and crawled along, a few cells called imaginal already held instructions for what to build when it came time for another body. Here the shining eye, the scaled wings. Let me remind you of the power of sticking around. If you feel shapeless and scared, imagine yourself in that tiny, thin-walled shell, whistling in the dark, some part of you already knowing the way.
Roger that. Thanks, Cassandra. Yeah, what a lovely poem. It's hard to overstate the importance of sticking around. Nature contains myriad change and potential, but she does indeed need time to work. It's worth remembering that. It's sometimes impossible to know which hardships in our lives are part of building our own chrysalises, or what we're on the way to becoming, eh? Oh, hang on a sec. The wind just blew open the door. Let me see if I can get it latched again. All right, I got it. Where were we? Maybe more than just the wind came in when the door blew open. There's a glimmer in the air by that old horse stall. Yeah? The shape. It's the ghost flies, all right. The glow is the color of sea glass tonight. A pale green, fine as dust in the air. It's condensing into a figure. Yeah. It looks like a man in a wide-brimmed hat. He's standing at the shattered door of that broken-down stall, and he's raising his hand to stroke the face of a horse I cannot see. His head's tilted, and his jaw seems to be moving, like he's talking to the invisible animal. Seems like he's saying something gentle. The tiny flies are bright enough that each broken board and discarded old farming implement is throwing off shadows in the ghost light. Ah, the swarm, the figure. It's turning away and moving back to the barn door. I know he can't see me, but I couldn't help nodding at him as he passed. It just seems polite. Ah, there goes that door again. Hang on. Okay. I got it. Back in darkness. The swarm is gone. The ghost is gone. I think I'll sit here for a spell and catch back up with you in the RV. I want to gather my thoughts for a bit. Hi again, listeners. I'm back in my regular studio. I've been pondering the ghost flies. They are, of course, fascinating and worthy creatures all on their own. But they also reflect some aspect of the world back to those who observe them. They are a mirror held up to reality. Sometimes, like tonight, that mirror shows us something soft and perhaps a bit bittersweet, a scene from a bygone time. Other times, well, I've seen the ghost flies on many occasions. I seem to have a knack for encountering them. Yes, I've seen them take on human shape before, but I've also seen them in the shape of thylacine, passenger pigeons, Caspian tigers, and Sicilian wolves, all species that were driven to extinction in the past 100 years. If ghost fly swarms are a kind of mirror, it's fair to say that the reflection is not always a pleasant sight. Yet, when that's the case, the mirror is hardly to blame. Still, some sights and memories are all the more vital because they are difficult. May they haunt us constructively and teach us to do better. Well, I see a field report light flashing here on my console. Let's take a listen.
This is Travis James, broadcasting on Cryptonaturalist frequency 11-58-1. Once, when I was a kid, I emerged onto a roadside after a day of crick walking and nearly bumped into an old man sitting there on the berm. And there I was, soaked jeans and muddy everything, carrying an old pickle jar full of tea-colored water and a crawdad doomed to be my pet for the next few weeks. The old fellow looked me up and down and asked one question. Do you know who owns this property, son? I answered with the confidence of a 10-year-old. Nobody owns it. It's the woods. He grinned. Well, the law says different. Says I own it. Now, the woods would say they own themselves, and if we're being honest, the woods was here before the law. I didn't have an answer for that. I was running the kid math on whether or not I was in trouble and if it was worth making a run for it. I guess he read the thought behind my expression. Look, young man, he said, I'm not concerned about it. I was relieved, but then he said something that kicked a bucket of ice water in my guts. Just don't go north of here. There's a big old stump upstream where the creek splits. Stay away from it. The stump's been there all my life, and it's never been quite right. You get me? I didn't.
Yes, sir,
I said. He asked me for my word, and I gave it, not thinking much about it, but recognizing a way to end the conversation. He swiped a fingertip through the roadside dust and touched it to my forehead. I flinched. You have yourself a good day, he said. And I turned homeward, going as fast as I could without spilling my new pet. And then something unusual happened. I listened to him. I took his advice. I kept my word. I didn't mean to, but something about those words put a splinter between my eyes and threatened to sink deeper any time I even looked towards the place he'd warned me against. The years got on, and the memory dulled like a sun-faded can down amongst the ditch lilies. I grew up, and I began to see things in the woods that other people didn't. I know many of you listening to this can relate. My interest led me to become a crypto-naturalist, and my passions and professions put me on friendly terms with many an odd and unsettling sight beneath the trees. Ignorance leads to fear, but curiosity adds new variables to that equation. The unknown is fearful, but it's often up to us if that fear is a wall or a gateway. So, decades after my talk with that old man, I went back to those woods that nobody owns. I went back armed with new knowledge and experience. I scrabbled down the hillside to the creek, smiling at the crawdad holes, little chimneys built of mud cobbles. I didn't walk in the water the way I once had. I traced along the bank, moving quiet, hoping to glimpse a mink or a muskrat, the fabled phantoms of my childhood wanderings. I felt that splinter again. It was like a shard of crystalline nostalgia digging into my mind. I tried to drown the sensation with the deluge of my stubborn curiosity and had a bit of luck. The ache eased. Somehow, I knew the exact moment when I'd gone further north along that creek than I ever had before. I pressed on. It wasn't far. There was the stump, big as a tool shed, alive with cascading moss and toadstools pale as a rat snake's belly. I stopped. I didn't mean to stop, but I just did. Movement drew my eye up, and there, sitting cross-legged on top of all that rotting wood, was the old man I'd met 20 years earlier. He looked much the same, except he was naked, but for a mantle of curling autumn leaves draped over his shoulder. A crown, toothy with honey locust thorns, hovered 6 inches above his lank, gray hair. I looked at him, and I felt the crick of my own thoughts swelling with frigid snowmelt escaping its banks. I smelled loam and mildew, soil and leaf rot. He inclined his head, and then made a turnaround gesture, stirring the air with one knob-knuckled finger. I gave an awkward little bow, and then obeyed. I desperately wanted to look back. I didn't. Maybe nobody owns the woods. Maybe the woods own themselves, but it's worth remembering that each stretch of trees is at least as diverse as people, and, well, their opinions on ownership will vary. Travis Janes, signing off.
Ah, ownership is indeed a topic of some debate. Personally, I think ownership should at least come with a responsibility to understand and enrich. It seems to me that any real connection with place should start there. The trees, like so many residents of woodland communities, are great teachers of living in a way that makes their world better through their presence. Until next time, we're all strange animals, so act like it. Thanks to Emily Lygren for today's hidden lore poem, Chrysalis. Emily Lygren is a poet and educator who has published poems in several literary journals and anthologies, and developed dozens of publications focused on outdoor science education. Her first collection of poems, What We Were Born For, was selected by the Young People's Poet Laureate as the Poetry Foundation's monthly book pick for February 2022. Emily lives in San Rafael, California, where she wonders about oaks and teaches poetry in local classrooms. Find her online at emilylygren.com. And thanks to Leslie Anderson for reading today's hidden lore. You know Leslie is the voice of Cassandra and the voice of the credits. You may not know that Leslie has a new horror novel coming this August from Quirk Books. The book is titled The Unmothers, and it's a folk horror mystery about a journalist going to a small town to investigate a rumor about a horse giving birth to a healthy human baby. Best-selling author Sarah Gailey said, "The Unmothers is exquisite and haunting in equal measure, nauseatingly tense and crushingly insightful. The book represents an absolutely vital entry into the horror canon." I had a chance to read an early copy, and I would have to agree with Sarah. For pre-order information, visit LeslieJAnderson.com. Pre-orders for Jared K. Anderson's new memoir about loving nature and struggling with depression are now open. Visit JaredKAnderson.com for more information. Thanks to Steve Shell for voicing today's field report. Steve is a co-creator, writer, and voice of the narrator on the Old Gods of Appalachia podcast. Old Gods is entering the home stretch of their fourth season and will be heading out on tour again this summer.
To find bonus content and a variety of strange rewards, support our show by visiting patreon.com/cryptonaturalist. You can also help by rating, reviewing, and telling a friend. The Crypto Naturalist is written and read by Jared K. Anderson. For books and poetry collections by Jared K. Anderson and Leslie J. Anderson, visit cryptonaturalist.com/books. You'll find information about submitting your poetry or prose for our hidden lore segments in the About section of our website at cryptonaturalist.com. This show is produced and edited by Tracy Barnett. You can find them online anywhere at The Other Tracy or theothertracy.com. Thanks to Adam Hurt for the use of his song Garfield's Blackberry Blossom from his album Insight. For more information on Adam's music, performances, and teaching, visit adamhurt.com. Reminder, transcripts of this and every episode are available at cryptonaturalist.com. Stay curious, stay wild, stay weird.
Postscript. If you see a ghost, treat it with the same gentle care with which we should approach all natural wonders of our world.